I'll search you first. Officer Krams deftly frisked him and came up with Rick's service pistol and laser tube. He appropriated both after a moment of sniffing the muzzle of the pistol. "This has been fired recently," he said. "I retired in Andy just now," Rick said. "The remains are still in my car up on the roof." "Okay," Officer Cram said. "We'll go up and have a look." As the two of them started from the dressing room, Miss Luft followed as far as the door.
"He won't come back again, will he, officer? I'm really afraid of him. He's so strange."
"If he's got the body of someone he killed upstairs in his car," Cram said, "he won't be coming back." He nudged Rick forward, and together, the two of them ascended by elevator to the roof of the opera house. Opening the door of Rick's car, Officer Krams silently inspected the body of Polakoff. "An android," Rick said. "I was sent after him. He almost got me by pretending to be..." "They'll take your statement at the Hall of Justice," Officer Krams interrupted. He nudged Rick over to his parked, plainly marked police car. There, by police radio, he put in a call for someone to come pick up Polakoff. "Okay, Deckard," he said then, ringing off. "Let's get started." With the two of them aboard, the patrol car zoomed up from the roof and headed south. Something, Rick noticed, was not as it should be. Officer Krams had steered the car in the wrong direction. "The Hall of Justice," Rick said, "is north, on Lombard." "That's the old Hall of Justice," Officer Krams said. "The new one is on Mission. That old building, it's disintegrating. It's a ruin. Nobody's used that for years. Has it been that long since you last got booked?" "Take me there," Rick said. "To Lombard Street." He understood it all now. Saw what the androids, working together, had achieved. He would not live beyond this ride. For him, it was the end, as it had almost been for Dave, and probably eventually would be. "That girl's quite a looker," Officer Krams said. "Of course, with that costume, you can't tell about her figure. But I'd say it's damn okay." Rick said, "Admit to me that you're an android." "Why?" "I'm not an android." "What do? Roam around killing people and telling yourself they're androids?" "I can see why Miss Luft was scared. It's a good thing for her that she called us." "Then take me to the Hall of Justice on Lombard." "Like I said, it'll take about 3 minutes," Rick said. "I want to see it. Every morning I check in for work there. I want to see that it's been abandoned for years, as you say." "Maybe you're an android," Officer Krams said. "With a false memory, like they give them. Had you thought of that?" He grinned frigidly as he continued to drive south. Conscious of his defeat and failure, Rick settled back and, helplessly, waited for what came next. Whatever the androids had planned, now that they had physical possession of him. "But I did get one of them," he told himself. "I got Polakoff. And Dave got two." Hovering over Mission, Officer Krams's police car prepared to descend for its landing. Chapter 10. The Mission Street Hall of Justice building, onto the roof of which the hover car descended, jutted up in a series of Baroque ornamented spires. Complicated and modern, the handsome structure struck Rick Deckard as attractive, except for one aspect. He had never seen it before. the police hover car landed, and a few minutes later, he found himself being booked. 304, Officer Krams said to the sergeant at the high desk. And 612.4, and let's see, representing himself to be a peace officer. 406.7, the desk sergeant said, filling out the forms. He wrote leisurely in a slightly bored manner. Routine business, his posture and expression declared. Nothing of importance. Over here, Officer Krams said to Rick, leading him to a small white table at which a technician operated familiar equipment. For your cephalic pattern, Krams said. Ident purposes. Rick said brusquely, I know. In the old days, when he had been a harness bull himself, he had brought many suspects to a table like this. Like this, but not this particular table. His cephalic pattern taken, he found himself being led off to an equally familiar room. Reflexively, he began assembling his valuables for transfer. It makes no sense, he said to himself. Who are these people? If this place has always existed, why didn't we know about it? And why don't they know about us? Two parallel police agencies, he said to himself. Ours and this one. But never coming in contact, as far as I know, until now. Or maybe they have, he thought. Maybe this isn't the first time. Hard to believe, he thought, that this wouldn't have happened long ago. If this really is a police apparatus here, if it's what it asserts itself to be. A man, not in uniform, detached himself from the spot at which he had been standing. He approached Rick Deckard at a measured, unruffled pace, gazing at him curiously. What's this one? He asked Officer Krams. Suspected homicide, Krams answered. We have a body. We found it in his car, but he claims it's an android. We're checking it out, giving it a bone marrow analysis at the lab. And posing as a police officer, a bounty hunter, to gain access to a woman's dressing room in order to ask her suggestive questions. She doubted he was what he said he was and called us in. Stepping back, Krams said, Do you want to finish up with him, sir? All right. The senior police official, not in uniform, blue-eyed, with a narrow, flaring nose and inexpressive lips, eyed Rick, then reached for Rick's briefcase. What do you have in here, Mr. Deckard? Rick said, Material pertaining to the Voight-Kampff personality test. I was testing a suspect when Officer Krams arrested me. He watched as the police official rummaged through the contents of the briefcase, examining each item. The questions I asked Miss Luft are standard VK questions, printed on the... Do you know George Gleason and Phil Resch? The police official asked. No, Rick said. Neither name meant anything to him. They're the bounty hunters for Northern California. Both are attached to our department. Maybe you'll run into them while you're here. Are you an android, Mr. Deckard? The reason I ask is that several times in the past we've had escaped Andes turn up, posing as out-of-state bounty hunters here in pursuit of a suspect. Rick said, I'm not an android. You can administer the Voight-Kampff test to me. I've taken it before, and I don't mind taking it again. But I know what the results will be. Can I phone my wife? You're allowed one call. Would you rather phone her than a lawyer? I'll phone my wife, Rick said. She can get a lawyer for me. The plainclothes police officer handed him a 50-cent piece and pointed.
There's the vid phone over there. He watched as Rick crossed the room to the phone. Then he returned to his examination of the contents of Rick's briefcase. Inserting the coin, Rick dialed his home phone number and stood for what seemed like an eternity, waiting. A woman's face appeared on the vid screen.
"Hello," she said.
It was not Erin. He had never seen the woman before in his life. He hung up, walked slowly back to the police officer.
"No luck?" the officer asked. "Well, you can make another call. We have a liberal policy in that regard. I can't offer you the opportunity of calling a bondsman because your offense is unbailable at present. When you're arraigned, however..."
"I know," Rick said acridly. "I'm familiar with police procedure."
"Here's your briefcase," the officer said. He handed it back to Rick. "Come into my office. I'd like to talk with you further."
He started down a side hall, leading the way. Rick followed. Then, pausing and turning, the officer said,
"My name is Garland."
He held out his hand, and they shook, briefly.
"Sit down," Garland said as he opened his office door and pushed behind a large, uncluttered desk.
Rick seated himself, facing the desk.
"This Voight-Kampff test," Garland said, "that you mentioned."
He indicated Rick's briefcase.
"All that material you carry."
He filled and lit a pipe, puffed for a moment.
"It's an analytical tool for detecting Andes?"
"It's our basic test," Rick said. "The only one we currently employ. The only one capable of distinguishing the new Nexus 6 brain unit. You haven't heard of this test?"
"I've heard of several profile analysis scales for use with androids, but not that one."
He continued to study Rick intently, his face turgid. Rick could not fathom what Garland was thinking.
"Those smudged carbon flimsies," Garland continued, "that you have there in your briefcase. Polakoff, Miss Luft, your assignments. The next one is me."
Rick stared at him, then grabbed for the briefcase. In a moment, the carbons lay spread out before him. Garland had told the truth. Rick examined the sheet. Neither man, or rather neither he nor Garland, spoke for a time, and then Garland cleared his throat, coughed nervously.
"It's an unpleasant sensation," he said, "to find yourself a bounty hunter's assignment all of a sudden, or whatever it is you are, Deckard."
He pressed a key on his desk intercom and said, "Send one of the bounty hunters in here. I don't care which one."
"Okay, thank you."
He released the key.
"Phil Resch will be in here a minute or so from now," he said to Rick. "I want to see his list before I proceed."
"You think I might be on his list?" Rick said.
"It's possible. We'll know pretty soon. Best to be sure about these critical matters. Best not to leave it to chance. This info sheet about me," he indicated the smudged carbon, "it doesn't list me as a police inspector. It inaccurately gives my occupation as insurance underwriter. Otherwise, it's correct, as to physical description, age, personal habits, home address." "Yes, it's me, all right." "Look for yourself."
He pushed the page to Rick, who picked it up and glanced over it. The office door opened, and a tall, fleshless man with hard-etched features, wearing horn-rimmed glasses and a fuzzy Van Dyke beard, appeared. Garland rose, indicating Rick. Phil Resch, Rick Deckard. You're both bounty hunters, and it's probably time you met. As he shook hands with Rick, Phil Resch said, Which city are you attached to? Garland answered for Rick.
San Francisco.
Here, take a look at his schedule. This one comes up next. He handed Phil Resch the sheet which Rick had been examining, that with his own description.
Segar, Phil Resch said. This is you.
There's more, Garland said.
He's also got Luba Luft, the opera singer, there on his list of retirement assignments. And Polakoff. Remember Polakoff? He's now dead. This bounty hunter, or android, or whatever he is, got him, and we're running a bone marrow test at the lab to see if there's any conceivable basis.
Polakoff, I've talked to, Phil Resch said. That big Santa Claus from the Soviet police?
He pondered, plucking at his disarrayed beard. I don't think it's a good idea to run a bone marrow test on him.
Why do you say that? Garland asked, clearly annoyed.
It's to remove any legal basis on which this man Deckard could claim he hadn't killed anyone. He only retired an android.
Phil Resch said, Polakoff struck me as cold. Extremely cerebral and calculating. Detached.
A lot of the Soviet police are that way, Garland said, visibly nettled.
Luba Luft I never met, Phil Resch said. Although I've heard records she's made.
To Rick, he said, Did you test her out?
I started to, Rick said, but I couldn't get an accurate reading. And she called in a harness bull, which ended it.
And Polakoff? Phil Resch asked.
I never got a chance to test him either. Phil Resch said, mostly to himself, And I assume you haven't had an opportunity to test out Inspector Garland here.
Of course not, Garland interjected, his face wrinkled with indignation. His words broke off, bitter and sharp.
What test do you use? Phil Resch asked.
The Voight-Kampff scale.
Don't know that particular one.
Both Resch and Garland seemed deep in rapid professional thought, but not in unison.
I've always said, he continued, that the best place for an android would be with a big police organization such as WPO. Ever since I first met Polakoff, I've wanted to test him. But no pretext ever arose.
It never would have either, which is one of the values such a spot would have for an enterprising android. Getting slowly to his feet, Inspector Garland faced Phil Resch and said, Have you wanted to test me too? A discreet smile traveled across Phil Resch's face. He started to answer, then shrugged, and remained silent. He did not seem afraid of his superior, despite Garland's palpable wrath.
I don't think you understand the situation, Garland said. This man, or android, Rick Deckard, comes to us from a phantom, hallucinatory, non-existent police agency allegedly operating out of the old departmental headquarters on Lombard. He's never heard of us, and we've never heard of him. Yet, ostensibly, we're both working the same side of the street. He employs a test we've never heard of. The list he carries around isn't of androids, it's a list of human beings. He's already killed once. At least once. And if Miss Luft hadn't gotten to a phone, he probably would have killed her, and then eventually he would have come sniffing around after me.
Hmm, Phil Resch said.
Hmm,
Garland mimicked, wrathfully.
He looked now as if he bordered on apoplexy. "Is that all you have to say?" The intercom came on and a female voice said, "Inspector Garland, the lab report on Mr. Polakoff's corpse is ready."
"I think we should hear it," Phil Resch said.
Garland glanced at him, seething. Then he bent, pressed the key of the intercom. "Let's have it, Miss French." "The bone marrow test," Miss French said, "shows that Mr. Polakoff was a humanoid robot." "Do you want a detailed?"
"No, that's enough."
Garland settled back in his seat, grimly contemplating the far wall. He said nothing to either Rick or Phil Resch. Resch said, "What is the basis of your Voight-Kampff test, Mr. Deckard?" "Empathic response. In a variety of social situations, mostly having to do with animals."
"Ours is probably simpler," Resch said.
"The reflex arc response taking place in the upper ganglia of the spinal column requires several microseconds more in the humanoid robot than in a human nervous system." Reaching across Inspector Garland's desk, he plucked a pad of paper toward him. With a ballpoint pen, he drew a sketch. "We use an audio signal or a light flash. The subject presses a button and the elapsed time is measured. We try it a number of times, of course. Elapsed time varies in both the Andy and the human. But by the time 10 reactions have been measured, we believe we have a reliable clue. And, as in your case with Polakoff, the bone marrow test backs us up." An interval of silence passed, and then Rick said, "You can test me out. I'm ready. Of course, I'd like to test you too, if you're willing."
"Naturally," Resch said.
He was, however, studying Inspector Garland.
"I've said for years," Resch murmured, "that the Bonelli reflex arc test should be applied routinely to police personnel. The higher up the chain of command, the better. Haven't I, Inspector?"
"That's right. You have," Garland said. "And I've always opposed it. On the grounds that it would lower department morale."
"I think now," Rick said, "you're going to have to sit still for it. In view of your lab's report on Polakoff."
Chapter 11.
Garland said, "I guess so." He jabbed a finger at the bounty hunter Phil Resch. "But I'm warning you. You're not going to like the results of the tests."
"Do you know what they'll be?" Resch asked with visible surprise. He did not look pleased.
"I know almost to a hair," Inspector Garland said.
"Okay,"
Resch nodded.
"I'll go upstairs and get the Benelli gear."
He strode to the door of the office, opened it, and disappeared out into the hall.
"I'll be back in 3 or 4 minutes, he said to Rick.
The door shut after him. Reaching into the right-hand top drawer of his desk, Inspector Garland fumbled about, then brought forth a laser tube. He swiveled it until it pointed at Rick.
"That's not going to make any difference," Rick said.
"Resch will have a post-mortem run on me, the same as your lab ran on Polakoff. And he'll still insist on a, what did you call it, Benelli reflex arc test on you and on himself." The laser tube remained in its position, and then Inspector Garland said,
"It was a bad day all day. Especially when I saw Officer Krams bringing you in. I had an intuition. That's why I intervened.
By degrees, he lowered the laser beam. He sat gripping it, and then he shrugged and returned it to the desk drawer, locking the drawer and restoring the key to his pocket.
"What will tests on the three of us show?" Rick asked.
Garland said, "That damn fool, Resch."
"He actually doesn't know?"
"He doesn't know. He doesn't suspect. He doesn't have the slightest idea. Otherwise, he couldn't live out a life as a bounty hunter, a human occupation, hardly an android occupation."
Garland gestured toward Rick's briefcase.
"Those other carbons, the other suspects you're supposed to test and retire, I know them all."
He paused, then said,
"We all came here together on the same ship from Mars."
"Not Resch. He stayed behind another week, receiving the synthetic memory system." He was silent then. Or rather, it was silent. Rick said, "What'll he do when he finds out?"
"I don't have the foggiest idea," Garland said remotely. "It ought, from an abstract intellectual viewpoint, to be interesting. He may kill me, kill himself. Maybe you too. He may kill everyone he can, human and android alike. I understand that such things happen when there's been a synthetic memory system laid down, when one thinks it's human."
"So when you do that, you're taking a chance." Garland said,
"It's a chance anyway, breaking free and coming here to Earth, where we're not even considered animals, where every worm and woodlouse is considered more desirable than all of us put together."
Irritably, Garland picked at his lower lip.
"Your position would be better if Phil Resch could pass the Benelli test, if it was just me. The results that way would be predictable. To Resch, I'd just be another Andy to retire as soon as possible. So you're not in a good position either, Deckard. Almost as bad, in fact, as I am. You know where I guessed wrong? I didn't know about Polyakov. He must have come here earlier. Obviously, he came here earlier. In another group entirely. No contact with ours. He was already entrenched in the WPO when I arrived. I took a chance on the lab report, which I shouldn't have. Krams, of course, took the same chance."
"Polyakov was almost my finish, too," Rick said.
"Yes, there was something about him. I don't think he could have been the same brain unit type as we. He must have been souped up or tinkered with. An altered structure, unfamiliar even to us. A good one, too. Almost good enough."
"When I phoned my apartment," Rick said, "why didn't I get my wife?"
"All our vidphone lines here are trapped. They recirculate the call to other offices within the building. This is a homeostatic enterprise we're operating here, Deckard. We're a closed loop cut off from the rest of San Francisco. We know about them, but they don't know about us. Sometimes an isolated person such as yourself wanders in here, or, as in your case, is brought here. For our protection."
He gestured convulsively toward the office door.
"Here comes eager beaver Phil Resch back with his handy-dandy portable little test. Isn't he clever? He's going to destroy his own life and mine, and possibly yours."
"You androids," Rick said, "don't exactly cover for each other in times of stress."
Garland snapped, "I think you're right.
It would seem we lack a specific talent you humans possess. I believe it's called empathy.
The office door opened. Phil Resch stood outlined, carrying a device which trailed wires. "Here we are," he said, closing the door after him. He seated himself, plugging the device into the electrical outlet. Bringing out his right hand, Garland pointed at Resch. At once, Resch, and also Rick Deckard, rolled from their chairs and onto the floor. At the same time, Resch yanked a laser tube and, as he fell, fired at Garland. The laser beam, aimed with skill, based on years of training, bifurcated Inspector Garland's head. He slumped forward, and from his hand, his miniaturized laser beam rolled across the surface of his desk. The corpse teetered on its chair, and then, like a sack of eggs, it slid to one side and crashed to the floor. "It forgot," Resch said, rising to his feet, "that this is my job. I can almost foretell what an android is going to do. I suppose you can, too." He put his laser beam away, bent, and with curiosity examined the body of his quondam superior. "What did it say to you while I was gone?" "That he... it was an android. And you..." Rick broke off, the conduits of his brain humming, calculating, and selecting. He altered what he had started to say. "Would detect it," he finished. "In a few more minutes." "Anything else?" "This building is android infested." Resch said introspectively, "That's going to make it hard for you and me to get out of here. Nominally, I have the authority to leave any time I want, of course. And to take a prisoner with me." He listened. No sound came from beyond the office. "I guess they didn't hear anything. There's evidently no bug installed here, monitoring everything. As there should be." Gingerly, he nudged the body of the android with the toe of his shoe. "It certainly is remarkable, the psionic ability you develop in this business. I knew before I opened the office door that he would take a shot at me. Frankly, I'm surprised he didn't kill you while I was upstairs." "He almost did," Rick said. "He had a big utility model laser beam on me part of the time. He was considering it, but it was you he was worried about, not me." "The android flees," Resch said humorlessly, "where the bounty hunter pursues." "You realize, don't you, that you're going to have to double back to the opera house and get Luba Luft before anyone here has a chance to warn her as to how this came out? Warn it, I should say. Do you think of them as it?" "I did at one time," Rick said, "when my conscience occasionally bothered me about the work I had to do. I protected myself by thinking of them that way, but now I no longer find it necessary. All right, I'll head directly back to the opera house, assuming you can get me out of here." "Suppose we sit Garland up at his desk," Resch said. He dragged the corpse of the android back up into its chair, arranging its arms and legs so that its posture appeared reasonably natural, if no one looked closely, if no one came into the office. Pressing a key on the desk intercom, Phil Resch said, "Inspector Garland has asked that no calls be put through to him for the next half hour. He's involved in work that can't be interrupted."
"Yes, Mr. Resch."
Releasing the intercom key, Phil Resch said to Rick, "I'm going to handcuff you to me during the time we're still here in the building. Once we're airborne, I'll naturally let you go." He produced a pair of cuffs,
slapped one onto Rick's wrist and the other around his own.
Come on. Let's get it over with.
He squared his shoulders, took a deep breath, and pushed open the office door. Uniformed police stood or sat on every side, conducting their routine business of the day. None of them glanced up or paid any attention as Phil Resch led Rick across the lobby to the elevator.
What I'm afraid of, Resch said as they waited for the elevator, is that the Garland one had a dead man's throttle warning component built into it. But, he shrugged, I would have expected it to go off by now. Otherwise, it's not much good.
The elevator arrived. Several police-like nondescript men and women disemelevatored, clacked off across the lobby on their several errands. They paid no attention to Rick or Phil Resch.
Do you think your department will take me on? Resch asked as the elevator doors shut, closing the two of them inside.
He punched the roof button and the elevator silently rose.
After all, as of now, I'm out of a job, to say the least.
Guardedly, Rick said, I don't see why not. Except that we already have two bounty hunters. I've got to tell him, he said to himself. It's unethical and cruel not to. Mr. Resch, you're an android, he thought to himself. You got me out of this place, and here's your reward. You're everything we jointly abominate. The essence of what we're committed to destroy.
I can't get over it, Phil Resch said. It doesn't seem possible. For 3 years, I've been working under the direction of androids. Why didn't I suspect? I mean, enough to do something.
Maybe it isn't that long. Maybe they only recently infiltrated this building.
They've been here all the time.
Garland has been my superior from the start, throughout my 3 years. According to it, Rick said, the bunch of them came to Earth together. And that wasn't as long ago as 3 years. It's only been a matter of months.
Then at one time an authentic Garland existed, Phil Resch said, and somewhere along the way got replaced.
His shark-like lean face twisted and he struggled to understand.
Or I've been impregnated with a false memory system. Maybe I only remember Garland over the whole time. But
his face, suffused now with growing torment, continued to twist and work spasmodically.
Only androids show up with false memory systems. It's been found ineffective in humans.
The elevator ceased rising. Its doors slid back, and there, spread out ahead of them, deserted except for empty parked vehicles, lay the police station's roof field.
Here's my car,
Phil Resch said, unlocking the door of a nearby hover car and waving Rick rapidly inside. He himself got in behind the wheel and started up the motor. In a moment, they had lifted into the sky and, turning north, headed back in the direction of the War Memorial Opera House. Preoccupied, Phil Resch drove by reflex. His progressively more gloomy train of thought continued to dominate his attention.
Listen, Deckard, he said suddenly. After we retire Luba Luft, I want you to...
His voice, husky and tormented, broke off.
You know, give me the Benelli test, or that empathy scale you have, to see about me.
We can worry about that later,
Rick said evasively. You don't want me to take it, do you?
Phil Resch glanced at him with acute comprehension.
I guess you know what the results will be.
Garland must have told you something. Facts which I don't know. Rick said, it's going to be hard even for the two of us to take out Luba Luft. She's more than I could handle anyhow. Let's keep our attention focused on that.
It's not just false memory structures, Phil Resch said. I own an animal. Not a false one, but the real thing. A squirrel. I love the squirrel, Deckard. Every goddamn morning I feed it and change its papers. You know, clean up its cage. And then in the evening when I get off work, I let it loose in my apt and it runs all over the place. It has a wheel in its cage. Ever seen a squirrel running inside a wheel? It runs and runs. The wheel spins, but the squirrel stays in the same spot. Buffy seems to like it, though.
I guess squirrels aren't too bright, Rick said. They flew on then, in silence.
Chapter 12. At the Opera House, Rick Deckard and Phil Resch were informed that the rehearsal had ended, and Miss Luft had left. Did she say where she intended to go? Phil Resch asked the stagehand, showing his police identification.
Over to the museum.
The stagehand studied the ID card.
She said she wanted to take in the exhibit of Edvard Munch that's there now. It ends tomorrow.
And Luba Luft, Rick thought to himself, ends today. As the two of them walked down the sidewalk to the museum, Phil Resch said,
What odds will you give?
She's flown. We won't find her at the museum.
Maybe, Rick said. They arrived at the museum building, noted on which floor the Munch exhibit could be found, and ascended. Shortly, they wandered amid paintings and woodcuts. Many people had turned out for the exhibit, including a grammar school class. The shrill voice of the teacher penetrated all the rooms comprising the exhibit, and Rick thought, that's what you'd expect an Andy to sound and look like, instead of like Rachel Rosen and Luba Luft, and the man beside him, or rather, the thing beside him.
Did you ever hear of an Andy having a pet of any sort? Phil Resch asked him.
For some obscure reason, he felt the need to be brutally honest. Perhaps he had already begun preparing himself for what lay ahead. In two cases that I know of, Andy's owned and cared for animals. But it's rare. From what I've been able to learn, it generally fails. The Andy is unable to keep the animal alive. Animals require an environment of warmth to flourish. Except for reptiles and insects.
Would a squirrel need that?
An atmosphere of love?
Because Buffy is doing fine. As sleek as an otter. I groom and comb him every other day.
At an oil painting, Phil Resch halted, gazed intently. The painting showed a hairless, oppressed creature with a head like an inverted pear, its hands clapped in horror to its ears, its mouth open in a vast, soundless scream. Twisted ripples of the creature's torment, echoes of its cry, flooded out into the air surrounding it. The man or woman, whichever it was, had become contained by its own howl. It had covered its ears against its own sound. The creature stood on a bridge, and no one else was present. The creature screamed in isolation, cut off by, or despite,
It's outcry.
He did a woodcut of this, Rick said, reading the card tacked below the painting.
I think, Phil Resch said, that this is how an Andy must feel.
He traced in the air the convolutions visible in the picture of the creature's cry.
I don't feel like that.
So maybe I'm not an... He broke off as several persons strolled up to inspect the picture.
There's Luba Luft.
Rick pointed and Phil Resch halted his somber introspection and defense. The two of them walked at a measured pace toward her, taking their time as if nothing confronted them. As always, it was vital to preserve the atmosphere of the commonplace. Other humans, having no knowledge of the presence of androids among them, had to be protected at all costs, even that of losing the quarry. Holding a printed catalog, Luba Luft, wearing shiny tapered pants and an illuminated gold vest-like top, stood absorbed in the picture before her. A drawing of a young girl, hands clasped together, seated on the edge of a bed, an expression of bewildered wonder and new, groping awe imprinted on the face.
Want me to buy it for you? Rick said to Luba Luft.
He stood beside her, holding laxly onto her upper arm, informing her by his loose grip that he knew he had possession of her. He did not have to strain in an effort to detain her. On the other side of her, Phil Resch put his hand on her shoulder, and Rick saw the bulge of the laser tube. Phil Resch did not intend to take chances, not after the near miss with Inspector Garland.
It's not for sale.
Luba Luft glanced at him idly, then violently as she recognized him. Her eyes faded and the color dimmed from her face, leaving it cadaverous, as if already starting to decay. As if life had, in an instant, retreated to some point far inside her, leaving the body to its automatic ruin.
I thought they arrested you. Do you mean they let you go?
Miss Luft, he said. This is Mr. Resch. Phil Resch, this is the quite well-known opera singer Luba Luft. To Luba, he said, the harness bull that arrested me is an android. So was his superior. Did you know an Inspector Garland? He told me that you all came here in one ship as a group. The police department which you called, Phil Resch said to her, operating out of a building on Mission is the organizing agency by which it would appear your group keeps in touch. They even feel confident enough to hire a human bounty hunter. Evidently,
you,
Luba Luft said, you're not human. No more than I am. You're an android, too. An interval of silence passed, and then Phil Resch said in a low but controlled voice,
well, we'll deal with that at the proper time.
To Rick, he said, let's take her to my car. One of them on each side of her, they prodded her in the direction of the museum elevator. Luba Luft did not come willingly, but on the other hand, she did not actively resist. Seemingly, she had become resigned. Rick had seen that before in androids, in crucial situations. The artificial life force animating them seemed to fail if pressed too far, at least in some of them, but not all. And it could flare up again furiously. Androids, however, had, as he knew, an innate desire to remain inconspicuous. In the museum, with so many people roaming around, Luba Luft would tend to do nothing.
the real encounter. For her, probably the final one, would take place in the car, where no one else could see. Alone, with appalling abruptness, she could shed her inhibitions. He prepared himself and did not think about Phil Resch. As Resch had said, it would be dealt with at a proper time. At the end of the corridor near the elevators, a little store-like affair had been set up. It sold prints and art books, and Luba halted there, tarrying. "Listen," she said to Rick. Some of the color had returned to her face. Once more, she looked, at least briefly, alive.
"Buy me a reproduction of that picture I was looking at when you found me. The one of the girl sitting on the bed."
After a pause, Rick said to the clerk, a heavy-jowled, middle-aged woman with netted gray hair, "Do you have a print of Munch's puberty?"
"Only in this book of his collected work," the clerk said, lifting down a handsome, glossy volume. $25.
"I'll take it." He reached for his wallet. Phil Resch said, "My departmental budget could never in a million years be stretched." "My own money," Rick said. He handed the woman the bills and Luba the book. "Now let's get started down," he said to her and Phil Resch.
"It's very nice of you,"
Luba said as they entered the elevator.
"There's something very strange and touching about humans. An android would never have done that."
She glanced icily at Phil Resch. It wouldn't have occurred to him. As he said, never in a million years. She continued to gaze at Resch, now with manifold hostility and aversion.
"I really don't like androids. Ever since I got here from Mars, my life has consisted of imitating the human, doing what she would do, acting as if I had the thoughts and impulses a human would have. Imitating, as far as I'm concerned, a superior life form."
To Phil Resch, she said,
"Isn't that how it's been with you, Resch? Trying to be?"
"I can't take this." Phil Resch dug into his coat, groped. "No," Rick said. He grabbed at Phil Resch's hand. Resch retreated, eluding him. "The Benelli test," Rick said. "It's admitted it's an android," Phil Resch said. "We don't have to wait." "But to retire it," Rick said, "because it's needling you. Give me that." He struggled to pry the laser tube away from Phil Resch. The tube remained in Phil Resch's possession. Resch circled back within the cramped elevator, evading him, his attention on Luba Luft only.
"Okay," Rick said.
"Retire it. Kill it now. Show it that it's right." He saw then that Resch meant to. "Wait!" Phil Resch fired, and at the same instant Luba Luft, in a spasm of frantic, hunted fear, twisted and spun away, dropping as she did so. The beam missed its mark, but as Resch lowered it, burrowed a narrow hole silently into her stomach. She began to scream. She lay crouched against the wall of the elevator, screaming. Like the picture, Rick thought to himself, and with his own laser tube, killed her. Luba Luft's body fell forward, face down in a heap. It did not even tremble. With his laser tube, Rick systematically burned into blurred ash the book of pictures which he had just a few minutes ago bought Luba. He did the job thoroughly, saying nothing. Phil Resch watched without understanding, his face showing his perplexity.
"You could have kept the book yourself,"
Resch said when it had been done. That cost you? Do you think androids have souls? Rick interrupted. Cocking his head on one side, Phil Resch gazed at him in even greater puzzlement. I could afford the book, Rick said. I've made $3,000 so far today, and I'm not even half through. You're claiming Garland? Phil Resch asked. But I killed him, not you. You just lay there. And Luba, too. I got her. You can't collect, Rick said. Not from your own department and not from ours. When we get to your car, I'll administer the Benelli test or the Voight-Kampff to you, and then we'll see. Even though you're not on my list. His hands shaking, he opened his briefcase, rummaged among the crumpled onion skin carbons. No, you're not here. So legally, I can't claim you. To make anything, I'll have to claim Luba, Luft, and Garland. You're sure I'm an android? Is that really what Garland said? That's what Garland said. Maybe he was lying, Phil Resch said. To split us apart, as we are now. We're nuts letting them split us. You were absolutely right about Luba Luft. I shouldn't have let her get my goat like that. I must be overly sensitive. That would be natural for a bounty hunter, I suppose. You're probably the same way. But look, we would have had to retire Luba Luft anyhow, half an hour from now. Only one half hour more. She wouldn't even have had time to look through that book you got her. And I still think you shouldn't have destroyed it. That's a waste. I can't follow your reasoning. It isn't rational, that's why. Rick said, I'm getting out of this business. And go into what? Anything. Insurance underwriting, like Garland was supposed to be doing. Or I'll emigrate. Yes. He nodded. I'll go to Mars. But someone has to do this, Phil Resch pointed out. They can use androids. Much better if Andy's doing. I can't anymore. I've had enough. She was a wonderful singer. The planet could have used her. This is insane. This is necessary. Remember, they killed humans in order to get away. And if I hadn't gotten you out of the Mission police station, they would have killed you. That's what Garland wanted me for. That's why he had me come down to his office. Didn't Polakoff almost kill you? Didn't Luba Luft almost? We're acting defensively. They're here on our planet. They're murderous, illegal aliens masquerading as... As police, Rick said. As bounty hunters. Okay. Give me the Benelli test. Maybe Garland lied. I think he did. False memories just aren't that good. What about my squirrel? Yes, your squirrel. I forgot about your squirrel. If I'm an Andy, Phil Resch said, and you kill me, you can have my squirrel. Here, I'll write it out, willing it to you. Andes can't will anything. They can't possess anything to will. Then just take it, Phil Resch said. Maybe so, Rick said. The elevator had reached the first floor now. Its doors opened. You stay with Luba. I'll get a patrol car here to take her to the Hall of Justice for her bone marrow test. He saw a phone booth, entered it, dropped in a coin and, his fingers shaking, dialed. Meanwhile, a group of people who had been waiting for the elevator